gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the wonderful procrastination in the sunny South Slave. South Pacific, but it came out wrong. Anyway, my very special guest is going to be recently announced his mayoralty for the Auckland Council. His name is John Minto, a veteran protester who also helps out at Unite Union. Minto, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Vincent.
All right, glad to have you with us. Can you tell us why you decided to run for mayor?
Well, I decided to run because Mana is the political party that I'm involved with, and we have got some big, exciting solutions to the very big problems with which Auckland is facing at the moment, and we want to put those forward in the election and give people a real alternative to the corporate rule which Auckland has had for certainly the last several decades in the time that I've been in the city.
Could you define Auckland's corporate rule exactly?
Well, I think Auckland, in my time here since the 1970s, has always had right-wing councils that have failed to invest in public projects, and we've got a city which is now well behind the eight ball in lots of ways, particularly things like public transport, public housing. Those, in fact, will be the two big issues, I think, for the election. And it's a city which has been run by private enterprise for private enterprise. And through disillusionment and apathy, the people of Auckland haven't engaged in local body elections for a long time. So by default, the right wing have had it given to them on a plate.
Okay. Now, how exactly are they manufacturing their corporate control? Does the business roundtable or the so-called Council of Auckland have anything to do with this?
Well, yeah, I think so. There's various ways in which that corporate control transpires, but I think the very strong support for, particularly for the citizens and ratepayers from the business community in Auckland, has meant that they have had a monopoly on council for a very long time. The last council was more evenly balanced between the centre and the centre right. And I put the City Vision candidates, most of them would fit into the centre rather than into the left, although some of them would argue are good left-wing people. So I think the last council was a little bit of a surprise and a good surprise, in that there was a small shift towards the centre. But we've still got council effectively controlled by the right wing, by business, and they have exerted their authority over the direction of Auckland for many decades now.
Well, let's start with an example then. Would you have an example of what's happening in Auckland right now and how you would do it different? Let's say transport.
Well, transport's a really big one, and we've got an exciting proposal to put to the people of Auckland about the way we could deal with traffic congestion in a very creative, positive, forward-looking way, which would be of benefit to everybody. But, Vincent, look, I'm not in a position to announce that policy at the moment, because we're going to announce it at the launch of our campaign, which will be later next month in June. At the moment, I can say that we've got the problem. We know what the problem is. It's traffic gridlock. It's the fact that there has been underinvestment in public transport for many decades, and the answer from the business elites has been, roads. These people are addicted to the smell of car seal, and they do not want any public sector involvement, or at least to keep the public sector involvement to an absolute minimum, because ideologically they believe the market should be providing these solutions, and clearly the market has completely failed in transport as in many other areas.
Well, that's because, in my opinion, the market is not a free market. It's simply a bunch of corporate crony scum who own and control pretty much everything that they want and do whatever they want.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And when we talk about markets, very often they are completely fake markets. If you take the electricity sector, for example, we've got in the 1990s, National set up this this market. They promised us it would be, it would deliver lower power prices. They promised it would deliver more greater efficiency, greater stability of power supplies. But in fact, what has happened is that what they did then was they chopped up our electricity sector for a country of 4 million people, tiny country. They chopped up our electricity sector into a number of competing organisations and then said, it's going to be, you know, it's going to work much better because this is a market. But in fact, it was an artificial market. And the way they set the electricity price was wrong. It was obviously going to end in a rort of the people of Auckland. And of course it has. We've had electricity prices rising at more than twice the rate of inflation for the last 12 years. So the market has been a failure. In fact, it was a fake market, and it operates not so much as competing companies, as just a bunch of companies joined effectively in a cartel to keep prices high and keep screwing the public.
Yeah, this is my... if we segue here from the mayoral campaign onto the asset sales, I'd be much obliged as well, because this is the kind of thing that doesn't make sense. Let's say you had a free market, and we don't. It's so very difficult for any kind of electricity provider to provide electricity efficiently, effectively, and cheaply to such a small country.
Yeah, it is. It's absolute madness. We've had, in the time I grew up, you know, my parents' generation built a marvellous infrastructure based on hydroelectricity, which is the cheapest electricity in the world. They built that in the dams in the South Island and along the Waikato River and invested heavily in it. And the result was marvellously cheap electricity for the people of New Zealand. But then we had the corporates getting on the back of that. We've got Comalco, the Comalco aluminium smelter owned by Rio Tinto, and that smelter has worked there for about 50 years now, and it has taken 15% of New Zealand's electricity. And even though we produce it cheaply, they get it far cheaper than even that. So they're paying probably less than a third of what domestic consumers pay in electricity prices here. So it was set up for the corporates. And then, of course, with this privatised model, free market model, and the chopping up of these companies and the creation of artificial markets, we've just become... You know, we've just become the suckers who are paying through the nose for the profits of these companies. And now, of course, because they're so profitable, the government wants to privatise them to give their wealthy friends the best opportunity to make even more money off the hard work the ordinary New Zealanders do.
It appears to me this is happening in a lot of countries around the world. And for those who would come up and tout privatisation of power companies, strategic resources to a country, and say that it's a good thing, I would like for them to state me one example of anywhere in the entire world that this has actually benefited anybody. Because all the examples that I've seen from Argentina, to Australia and America and everything of that nature, it has never worked out well for anybody. And even Branko Milanovic from he's the lead research economist at the World Bank, I believe, in terms of inequality. He says point blank, privatisation does not work.
Well, he's absolutely right. It doesn't. And if you think about it for a moment, it can't. Because what you're doing between the public and the service that's there to be provided to the public, they are putting private companies. So as soon as you put a private company between the supply and the reception of that supply, then you've automatically got to pay a premium because the private company wants to make a profit. So they make profits by increasing their prices they employ below what would be paid for normally. And so in those two ways, they make a lot of money, and the rest of us pay for that in increased power prices.
How did this happen with Telecom? As far as I know, Telecom, when it was owned by Bell Atlantic, which is incidentally a World Bank affiliated company, they didn't maintain lines properly and things of that nature, quality of service.
Look, Telecom is a classic example of an epic fail in privatisation, because Telecom used to be run by the post office under the rubric of the post office. There was the we had telecommunications, the phone lines, we had the parcel deliveries, you know, the postal deliveries, and we had the Post Office Savings Bank, and they were all in one unit. And what Labor did in the late 1980s, they split that unit, Post Office, into three parts. And they created New Zealand Post, they created Telecom, and they sold the Post Office Bank itself to ANZ Australia. So they and so they privatised two parts, and we still hold the postal section. And what they did with when they sold Telecom, it was sold by it was set up for sale by Labor, and then National completed the sale in 1990, and National sold it for $4.25 billion, and they sold it to Bell Atlantic and Ameritech, two overseas organisations, overseas companies. And in the next 10 years after they sold it, the Bell Atlantic and Ameritech made $12 billion in profit from Telecom. And then when Bell Atlantic and Ameritech sold it in around 2000, they sold it for $12 billion. So over that period of 10 years, we effectively had about $20 billion siphoned out of the country by Telecom. And what Telecom did, because it had a monopoly, it cut staff dramatically, cut pay, and the service decreased dramatically. So the service dropped dramatically. And while in other countries telecommunication services were improving rapidly, in New Zealand they were static. We were way behind in the provision of broadband. And in fact, even now, we're still suffering from very poor quality, high-priced broadband compared to other countries. And that's because Telecom had a monopoly. It refused to invest. It employed 90 lawyers. And those 90 lawyers were there to lobby and to pressure National and Labor governments to prevent the monopoly being broken. And they just absolutely creamed it at the expense of the people of New Zealand. And even 4 or 5 years ago, the second-to-last CEO of Telecom, can't think of her name right now, she made a speech in Sydney where she said, "We all know what," to a telecommunications conference, "We all know what we're doing here," she said. "We're making profits out of creating confusing policies, confusing products, and the public are being ripped off, and we all know the game." It was that sort of comment, and of course it caused a Ferrari back here. But this is what Telecom was doing as a monopoly. They finally had the monopoly broken by David Cunliffe under Labor, but New Zealand has been just screwed, absolutely screwed blind, by both Labor and National following neoliberal policies and hoisting on the backs of the population these private companies, which are there to make profits and rip us off rather than provide affordable services.
Well, think about this. Imagine if they did that with everything. Imagine if they did that with every single road and turned it into a toll road. If they did it with every single power company. If they did it with, imagine if they did it, John, with the very New Zealand government. What if they privatised the government and said...
Well, I think there are, what they would like to do, not the government, but they want to privatise schools, they want to privatise hospitals, they want to privatise everything. That's the National Party agenda. It was the Labor Party agenda in the 1980s. They've moved away from that somewhat, but they're still deeply addicted to neoliberalism. They've they do want to privatise all those things, and we know what will happen is that you know, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, gross inequality, dramatic increase in social problems, and the country is not a country fit to bring a dog up in.
Yeah, essentially. That's the direction this country seems to be going.
It is the direction.
Now, we'll be coming to break in just a few seconds, so I just wanted to wrap this up, and I hope you'll hold over and stay with us for the duration of the hour, John, is that this country is a ripe, suckling pig. Think about it. It's being tenderized, basted, and roasted, so all that meat falls right off the bone and is able to be slurped up by vicious packs of wolves coming over the borders from overseas investment scumbaggery. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com with John Minto.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about a little bit of history repeating. Speaking of history repeating, John Minto is my guest. He's going to be running for mayor of Auckland. He's a longtime veteran protester. Now, can I ask you, John, over your vast levels of experience in protesting, I would act under the assumption you see the same things happening over and over again, yes?
Well, I guess so, yeah. I think that's a fair comment. I mean, I've been around since 1970s in Auckland here, and, you know, I've lived through a pretty dramatic transfer of power from the power and wealth, really, from the poor to the rich. So you do see the same pattern come back again and again under neoliberalism. These people are addicted to making profit off the work that other people do, and that's how the whole corporate neoliberal agenda works.
Yeah, it's basically like a leech, essentially.
Yeah, like a leech, like a parasite. They, you know, as I said before, the power companies, the government hoists these companies on the back of the community, so they can suck at will from us to get, you know, their fix of income which they haven't earned.
Now, I believe the spokesperson for this this asset sale as well. Minister Tony Ryle said that if the share price fell below a certain level, he wouldn't sell it. And it has fallen well below that level that he set, and they're still selling it.
Oh, you mean the companies themselves?
Yeah.
I think they've, for them, it's just straight ideological. Their object is not to get the benefit for the New Zealand taxpayer. Their object is to get these assets into the hands of their friends. So it's irrelevant to them in one sense. I mean, they say they're concerned about the share price, but in fact they're not. They're not worried at all. And they're going to bring two more power companies onto the market.
Yeah.
Which again means that they won't get as high a price. And, you know, but that doesn't matter. The New Zealand taxpayer is a sucker here, and the government is just, you know, screwing us over. It was good to see that the majority of New Zealanders right from the outset have opposed this asset sale. We had three quarters of the country opposed to it right from day one. And in fact, Vinny, if you look at every single privatisation which has occurred since the 1980s, every single one, there's been a majority of the public opposed to it. This is going right back into Labor's early days in the 19, or particularly the second term of that Labor government in the 1980s. People opposed every single asset sale, but National and then Labor went ahead anyway. And in fact, if you look at those elections going back from 1987 right through to 2000, every single election, the public voted against Rogenomics. They voted against asset sales. They voted against privatisation. But whichever government was elected, they were elected on one set of policies and then quickly reverted to neoliberalism across the board. So no matter who you voted for, you ended up with neoliberalism. And that was the reason we ended up with MMP, because by the end of that period, people were getting so pissed off. They started to say, look, we've got to get rid of this duopoly, this national Labor running a free market. And so they voted in favour of MMP to try and bring in some moderating influence on these two big parties.
And then the unfortunate business is that Labor and National still dominate MMP as well.
They do, and I think... Yeah, they do, and that's a fair criticism of the left. I think that the left has not been able to effectively break that duopoly. And you have to remember the forces that we're up against are very strong, because it's the corporate sector, it's the Sky Cities of the world, it's the telecoms of the world that have funded both Labor and National to run their campaigns. You know, 30 or 40 years ago, Labor and National were genuine mass-based parties, and Labor would do its fundraising by running cake stalls. And they had a mass membership. They had hundreds of thousands of people who were members of the Labor Party, and they worked really tirelessly to fundraise, to support what people saw then as good policies, to maintain the welfare state, maintain decent paying conditions for workers and what have you. But then neoliberalism crushed all that, and Labor is now a shadow of what it was in terms of membership. And it doesn't have people to run cake stalls. And in any case, you'd have to run 1,000 cake stalls to get as much money as you get on one visit to the boardroom at Telecom, where they write out a cheque for $50,000 just like that. So that's the sort of money the Labor and National need to run their campaigns. They don't get it from ordinary people. They get it from the corporates, and the corporates dictate the policies that Labor and National go to the electorate with.
This is a form of corruption called state capture, where companies get control of the government at the policy level, so that
it's also called fascism. You know, when you have a merger of the state and corporate power, that's fascism. And I think we've seen, we see signs of that creeping fascism all the time. And the latest one is the GCSB legislation, which will allow our spy agency to spy on a whole, quote, class of people. In other words, all of the members of Mana, or all of the members of the Maritime Union, or all of the members of the Labor Party, for that matter, can be spied on by this organisation. I know I've said this before, but even now, this is probably the most serious attack on civil liberties that I've seen in my lifetime.
This is the Search and Surveillance Bill Mock 2, is it?
Yeah, well, this is the one here they've announced last week, where the spy agency, the GCSB, didn't follow its own rules, didn't follow the legislation, deliberately, systematically, over a long period of time, broke the law. It was not entitled, specifically prohibited from spying on New Zealanders, but it did, and it spied on 88 New Zealanders. Well, that's the ones that they have admitted spying on. There'll be a whole lot more besides that. But anyway, the 88 they've admitted spying on, those people are... This agency broke the law to do that. And then when they found out through the Kim.com thing, they found out to have broken the law, then suddenly the government turns around, and instead of castigating them, instead of demanding a complete wipeout of the senior management and the organisation, and the board control of the organisation, instead what they did was have introduced legislation to make it legal for them to do what they were doing illegally. So we've got a government which is hand in glove with the corporate sector, in this case, to spy on New Zealanders.
When the corporations take over the government, that's fascism, as history has proven. So if we were to think about New Zealand as a totalitarian state where the companies control everything, including the government, And anybody who resists the bankers or the giant, massive overseas global corporations, they will be surveilled, silenced, maybe even taken away to a government re-education camp at some point.
Yes, exactly. I think that's exactly the sort of thing that we're talking about. You know, if there is a serious threat to the status quo, then we will end up further down that route, and it will be done under the basis of law and order. That they'll blame extremists. They'll say it's when there are mass protests in the streets, they'll try and isolate it to a minority, blame the minority, arrest them, put them in jail, and run a police state to control everyone else.
So that's the future for New Zealand. And I always wonder that...
Chile have been through, lots of countries have been through police states where they've had democratically elected governments overthrown by American-backed manoeuvres using local politicians and army leaders. And, yeah, we could easily see that happen in New Zealand.
Well, is John Key used to work for the New York Federal Reserve Bank in New York... Is he an American agent come here to turn the country into a fascist dictatorship republic?
Well, I think he's here to do the job that the bankers want him to do. He's here to do the job the corporates want. And while he's doing that and doing it well for them, they'll keep him on. But if he fails to do that, he'll be out.
That's the choice in the Prime Minister we have, John. Isn't that quite frightening to you, that the only person that we seem to be able to get elected is a person who is there specifically to destroy the country?
Well, I'm not sure specifically to destroy the country, but certainly to keep the country, to keep New Zealanders in to keep ordinary New Zealanders struggling, yes. They're there for that, because the only way they can increase their profits is by further screwing down the living standards of the majority of people. So he's here to do that, to screw down the living standards of the majority of people. And that provides for a lot more income for the corporations. So I think that's where we're heading, and that's what his job is to do. But if it became too hard to make a profit here, they would want greater state powers for the government to be able to control the population, to make it more compliant. You know, I mean, some of these corporates won't be happy until we're all medieval serfs who are slogging day in, day out for them with no benefits and no hope or no opportunities to improve the standard of living of ourselves and our families.
Well, the only thing that actually equalizes any form of political power is the existence of a middle class. If you have the working class versus the rich elite, there's no buffer zone, and it's a complete despotic dictatorship type situation.
That's true. Yeah.
So the more that they milk the middle class, the more the middle class will be coming out of the political process and no longer participating in it, because, hey, they've got to go to work, they've got to raise their kids, they simply don't have enough spare money or spare time, for that matter, in order to politically participate whatsoever. And that's the agenda.
True, and around the Western world at the moment, the middle class is shrinking quite rapidly, and more people are effectively ending up as...
It's neo-slavery.
Ending up as part of the working class. In other words, they're middle class people who are losing their standing in the world, if you like, and they are losing the economic advantages that they used to have. Relatively well-paid jobs disappearing, and in the case of New Zealand, we're becoming a service economy rather than a manufacturing or production economy. And service economies always have low-paid, poor conditions of employment. So we're seeing the creation of lots more part-time, casualised jobs and less decent-paid jobs that the middle class would normally have been involved in. So, I mean, I think that's, you're right about the middle class has always, in a sense, maintained the rule of the elites, but it's becoming a clearer picture. and we've got the majority of people in a sort of a role of servitude. And that means that the challenges for us are greater, but the opportunities are greater as well.
Can we think about total solutions here? Because I'm very sceptical, and in fact I spoke with your party leader, Hone Harawira, about this, and I asked him, is it possible to actually make changes from inside Parliament as to how the country is really running? And he said to me that there's basically bugger all you can do from inside Parliament, because there's all these rules and all this scumbaggery that's going on, and and people don't want to listen. And I was just wondering, how much power does the how much real political recourse do the people really have? I mean, are we fighting a losing war against these people? Maybe we need a game changer.
Well, we do need a game changer. We you know, Hone's absolutely right. You can't do anything in Parliament unless you've got your army outside Parliament, if you know what I mean, unless you've got public support and public opinion behind you. Once you have the public opinion behind you, you can make changes through that, through the parliamentary process. But even then, it's extremely difficult because the corporates have their, they've really got their hand, or with their hands and their feet, if that's possible, around the throat of New Zealand. And they'll give a little bit of ground every now and again, but then they'll tighten up somewhere else. So there's very little that, that you can do through the parliamentary process, and that's why Mana, I joined Mana not because it's a political party, but because it's a political movement, and we're saying that if you have MPs, MPs are only one small part of your strategy. The rest of your strategy involves mobilising ordinary people to take action on the ground and in their local communities, both to change public opinion and to change the way their own communities run. So I think we've got a wee way to go. Mana's got a long way to go to gain the confidence of people that were able to do that. But I'm you know, from my personal point of view, I'm optimistic about it, and we're going to give it a really good go in the mayoral election and in the election campaign next year.
Yeah, well, it may not be a whole lot of choice, but there's certainly a lack of options. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. John Minto is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleed of uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world?
People welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Middle East is a modern.
You're listening live, hopefully, at American Freedom Radio. Radio.com. My very special guest for the remainder of this segment is the illustrious John Minto. You're kind of one of the country's most famous protesters, aren't you? John, are you there? No, we seem to have lost him for a second. We'll just give him a quick call back, if that works. John, are you there? He might be away for a bit. Just away from the computer. We'll come back to John when he returns to the phone. Okay. We'll have Penny Bright on the next segment as well. She's also running for the mayoral campaign of Auckland, also against this new GCSB search and surveillance type thing. They'll be able to surveil a whole lot of different political organizations and people throughout the country with absolutely no justification, just like they've been doing the entire time illegally. And what happens with liars is that they think that telling a lie and not being caught in the lie is the same thing as telling a truth. They're basically a bunch of really nasty people who have, how do I say this? No concern for morality. Or doing the right thing. They only do what they can. And this is the lesson of history, is that if you give people unchecked power, they basically take it to the limit, to things that ordinary people would find completely insane. In this country, we have gone absolutely nuts with power-mongering scumbags. They love it. They get away with it. And they continue to push the public all the time
into giving up even more of their freedoms, more of their liberties, and more of their money in order to ensure that these companies and other various individuals noted for their scumbaggery, like, well, basically every single cabinet minister that I can really think of, whether they be involved in the justice or climate change or the prime minister himself, who's also made himself the minister of tourism, as it turns out, they are all out for themselves. This is what psychopaths want at the end of the day. Two things and only two things. Power and control. Now, who among you would have such callous disregard for people? Who among you would be willing to sacrifice your countrymen and indeed your country? Can I ask, would you then stand up to these people if they did in fact do it to you? This is a dangerous situation that we find ourselves in, ladies and gentlemen. A situation of immense importance, perhaps more important than anything else that has ever happened in this country's history. Historically speaking, this country's very young. New Zealand is anyway. You know, and historically speaking, I guess our entire modern civilization is very young. Just walking around with cell phones now, that's a new thing. It's not more than 20, 30 years old or something like that since cell phones first appeared. Before that, the closest thing you could come to a cell phone was watching old school Star Trek and all the technology and stuff that's in there. And indeed, the so-called loving Federation world government that actually dominates it now kind of dominates today. Isn't that interesting? You know, you wonder how science fiction people get their ideas. I think they're all planned out, personally, to a large extent anyway. And I believe that it is quite likely that sci-fi scenarios may in fact become real. You know, if it's Blade Runner or something of that nature. And also, we have... excuse me, we've got Penny Bright calling in. Penny, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Vinny. Are we live?
Yes, we are. We've had John Minto drop off. I can't seem to get back a hold of him, so we'll have you fill in for the interim, and we have another hour afterwards. Now, he was talking about the GCSB being able to surveil political parties, and you were mentioning that to me on the phone before the show as well. I was wondering what your perspective was on it.
Well, breaking news, I've just finished half an hour ago talking to the Inspector General of the an Intelligence and Security, Paul Neza, because I've just made a formal complaint to Paul Neza because I have possibly the first reply to a Privacy Act request to the director of the GCSB, Ian Fletcher, wanting to know whether or not I'm one of the 88 New Zealanders who's been unlawfully spied on. Well, I followed the process as outlined by the Prime Minister's office, made a Privacy Act request directly to the director. I've waited a month and gone around a big fat circle because the reply that I've got is that they cannot confirm or deny. Well, what the hell is that all about? Because Rebecca Kitteridge, who's the Secretary of the Cabinet, who was given the job of doing this report on the GCSB, she said the one area of record keeping where they had done a good job was the warrants file. Somewhere in the GCSB office, there is a file that has 85 warrants from the SIS and 3 warrants from the New Zealand Police. And it's these warrants that the GCSB unlawfully relied upon in order to intercept and spy on New Zealanders. When, if you bother to read the GCSB Act for yourself, I did, and it took me less than an hour, and although I've never been to university or had a day's legal training in my life, I'm not stupid and I can read, and I really recommend people Google it and read it for yourself. It's absolutely crystal clear that they're not supposed to spy on New Zealanders, and there's no provision for the GCSB to rely on warrants that have come from the SIS or the police. The GCSB have to get their own warrants. And what I think's happened here is that those who are responsible at the GCSB, including the Prime Minister, including the Inspector General, including the staff who've done this unlawful spying, never even read the Act themselves. That's what I think, because the Act, in my view, is absolutely clear. The law doesn't need changing, it just hasn't been implemented.
Well, it occurs to me, Penny, that they don't read most of the legislation that goes through, because if they did read the legislation, then they wouldn't have plausible deniability.
Well, that's absolutely right. And what's fascinating to me, as a sort of a bit of a side issue here, Rebecca Kitteridge, who's now gone back to her job as the Secretary of the Cabinet, she pulled up the GCSB as not properly following the Public Records Act 2005, which I believe is an absolutely pivotal piece of legislation in this country. If you want genuine transparency and accountability, you must have proper, full and accurate written records. Well, guess what? You go to the Cabinet Manual, as I have, and what you see there is they talk about the need to store and dispose of records, but they don't make a big deal at all about creating records in the first place. So at the highest levels of what's perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, we do not have proper written records in place. No wonder the Prime Minister and these other ministers get these brain fades, because if you had somebody taking the minutes, diary noting key appointments, writing up memos, you wouldn't have to rely on your memory. And when you're running a country, you shouldn't be relying on your memory. There is a lawful duty to create and maintain full and accurate records, and that is not happening at either central or local government. That's what I've discovered. Public Records Act 2005. Read it for yourself.
Nobody wants to read the legislation, Penny. It's too boring and written in all that legal junk speak.
Well, it's not.
Hold on a second. I want legislation to be written in English. Is that hard? You know, frickin' English that people can understand? The public has no idea what legislation is out there because they can't even read it.
Feel the fear and do it. Quite frankly, it's not unclear. All you've got are sentences broken into paragraphs. And at the front, you've got letters and numbers and brackets. Look, just read it. And, of course, there's a lot of people that have got a vested interest in trying to mystify it and make it all way too complicated. It's not complicated at all. I don't find legislation hard at all. And I'm a tradesperson, basically. Like I say, never been to university, but I can read. Anybody who can read, just have a go. Read for yourself, because I tell you what, you're probably doing a lot better than those who actually get paid public monies to implement the legislation you're reading. They just make it up.
I read the legislation for slavery and usury in New Zealand. Apparently, it's illegal to compel someone to pay you back money that you've loaned them and get them to do work for you. It's called usury. And I was just thinking, oh, my God, what about every single bank in this country? What about every single cop in this country that gives you a fine and commands that you pay it even when you don't have the money and they force you to do it anyway? Is that usury? Is that slavery? According to the legislation, it is. But again, you're right, Penny. All of the laws and everything that would actually make society run just perfect are already in the legislation. They're just selectively enforced so certain people can keep their hands on the power reins and control. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Penny Bright is my guest. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and people who spy on everything you do in the hopes to send you to some gulag education centre, in the neoliberal sense of the word, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. We're broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated procrastination of New Zealand. The sunny, slave South Pacific island chains nation. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister John Key is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb so that they can pay the extra GST tax that he put up when he said that he wouldn't. My very special guest is Penny Bright. Welcome back.
Oh, hi, Vinny. New Zealand, the corrupt, polluted tax haven. Oops, sorry to pop the hot air balloon there. Yes. What I'd like to remind people of, Vinny, is when I stood as an Auckland mayoral candidate 3 years ago in 2010, I stood as a public watchdog, not a corporate lapdog, to try and help stop the corporate takeover of Auckland. And just briefly, this is what I campaigned on 3 years ago. It's time to roll back Rogernomics. This is not left versus right. This is public versus corporate. The Super City agenda is about replacing thousands of piggy-in-the-middle private contractors with fewer but bigger multinational snouts into a bigger public trough. Cut out the contractors. You didn't vote for this Auckland Super City and Rogernomics blitzkrieg to seize control of $28 billion of Auckland public assets. Seven corporate council-controlled organisations, CCOs, will grab 75% of Auckland regional rates. Do you want unelected business people controlling your interests? These CCOs will be run like a business, by business, for business, setting up for future privatisation under public-private partnerships, PPPs. Have your rates gone up, gone down since the last council amalgamations? Ever? The Super City legislation that set up this corporate structure, it can and must be repealed. You can make history. Vote for proven public watchdog. Vote Penny Bright for mayor. Well, in actual fact, I got less than 3,000 votes, but I do believe that seizing the moment and making this huge fuss about these issues did actually help to make sure that John Banks didn't get in, because he nailed his colours to the Super City mast and the ship went down. And Len Brown, who actually wasn't that much different to John Banks in terms of underpinning policies, but a bit more personable, he got in. Well, the fact of the matter is now, 3 years later, I am continuing the job, because now we have all the facts and evidence that prove the Super City was a corrupt corporate coup. And what now needs to happen is we must get rid of the CCOs, the corporate-controlled organisations. We must get rid of these unelected business people who are, like I say, running our region like a business, by business, for business, and the only interests that are being looked after are those of business. So what's happening is this time I've got a very clear action plan to prevent corruption, white-collar crime and corporate welfare, and that's what I'll be focusing on. And with for example, the Occupy Auckland appeal, where I was one of the two appellants, and we were successful, an evidence that I produced in the High Court shows how Auckland Council is being run by the 1%. And if people want to see the evidence of that, if you go to the website www.OccupyAucklandVersusAucklandCouncilAppeal.org.nz, you can see the affidavit I put in, the 10 new items of evidence I was allowed to adduce, and these are critical because they show how the Auckland Council is being run by the 1%. Have a look. That's the background.
Yeah. And how would you... Well, here's the thing that I don't get about the Super City, Penny.
Yep.
Every major poll that was taken said the vast majority of Aucklanders did not want it.
It was even in the legislation that a public binding poll must be held whenever you're amalgamating councils. And then they said, no, we're not doing that. And then people went, oh, we want a referendum then. We want the people's voice to be heard. Then they said, no, no referendum. So it's like, here's your $400 million plus of assets in your city, and we're taking it with or without your fracking approval, Auckland. Frack you.
Well, what happened is I've got in front of me a very popular leaflet that the Stop the Super City group helped put out. And this is dated June 2009, 4 years ago, and it makes exactly that point. Citizens have been denied our democratic right under the Local Government Act 2002 to a binding vote on the Super City proposal. Because under the Local Government Act 2002, Section 24 reorganisation proposal, Schedule 3, Section 49, poll must be held. It wasn't. What happened was at 30,000 feet, legislation was railroaded through which trampled over our lawful right to have a binding vote on the Super City. And, of course, the reason why they did that was because they knew the public would never, ever have agreed with us. And what's happened, Vinny, ever since we've had this Super City monstrosity forced upon us...
Everybody has been complaining.
Well, not only that, but the rates have only gone up. And that's what I said at the time. I said, this is not for citizens and ratepayers. They say you're going to get economies of scale. When they amalgamate these eight previous councils and put them all together, you will get savings. Is that right? So how come the rates keep going up? I'll tell you why. Because it's bigger contracts for fewer but bigger private contractors. And we're not being given the devilish detail. The books are not open, which is why I have not paid any rates for the last 5 years, and I won't. I've been taken to court twice, I've lost twice, but I've said directly at council meetings, looking at Len Brown in the eye, I said, if you want to apply to the High Court for a writ of sale of my property, because to enforce my not paying my rates, I said, bring it on. We will have an election campaign over that, because you promised, Len Brown, at the last elections, the books would be open. They're not. We are not being told the names of the contractors or consultants, the scope of the contracts, the term or the value of the contracts. Vinny, how can you do line-by-line accounting if the books aren't open and you don't get to see those lines? Are there any lines? We don't know where our money's going. And yet the council's just agreed to another 2.9 rates increase and the books still are not open.
We have no idea where the money's going.
No, we don't.
For all we know, it could be going into an enormous bag of cocaine that Len Brown has in his basement.
I'm not going there. But bottom line is, under the Local Government Act, we have a right to open, transparent, and democratically accountable local government. And all these people say, Penny Bright, why are you not paying your rates? Blah, blah. I'm saying, I am making a stand for everybody, because you're not going to tell me where my money's going. I'm not giving you any. That it's not prudent stewardship, and it's not following the Public Records Act, Section 17, which says at local government level, full and accurate records must be kept, including contracts with the private sector. The CEO is not doing his job. And I've gone to council meetings, I've looked at Doug Mackay in the eye, he's the CEO, and said, I don't believe you're fit for duty, because under Section 42 of the Local Government Act, which covers the role, the statutory duties of the CEO, they're supposed to have proper financial reporting systems in place. If the books are not open, those proper financial reporting systems are not in place. So he's not fit for duty. And I mean, I believe that the CEO, Doug Mackay, is like a form of corporate free-range chook. What happens is, he wanders around, he just seems to do exactly as he pleases, but he's not doing the job that he's getting an enormous amount of public money to do, which is to act as the principal administrative officer, CEO of Auckland Council, and to make sure the law is followed and things are done in a proper way. Well, guess what? They're not. They're not, and it's not okay.
Well, we suspected that this would be the agenda all the way from start to finish, didn't we, Penny?
Exactly
we saw this coming. It was so predictable, so obvious, so odious was the plan for Auckland City. And we saw right through it. I've known this was coming for years in advance, and everybody's just shocked as it comes in totally unexpectedly, and that all their rates are going up, and there's copious quantities of corruption, and a Freemason in the mayoral office chair. It was just like, well, you idiots, you didn't frickin' listen to us a couple of years ago, did you?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that some people now are guessing it, that there actually isn't much, I mean, difference, you know, in terms of, you know, Len Brown, John Banks. The fact is, although Len is more personable on a, you know, on a one-to-one basis, in actual fact, he's done nothing to stop the CCOs. And quite frankly, why would the unelected, hugely powerful private lobby group, the Committee for Auckland or the New Zealand Property Council, and it's those two groups that are running the Auckland region, let's get this dead straight, why would they want anybody to replace Len? No disrespect, Len, but you're doing a great job for the 1%, and that's a fact.
Yeah. The Committee for Auckland involved in the commission of a crime, basically. That's as far as I see it.
Well, the fact is, how many people have even heard of the Committee for Auckland? Let me tell you about the Committee for Auckland. They're basically the business roundtable on steroids, okay? That the Committee for Auckland is not just CEOs of huge private sector companies, but it's CEOs of district health boards, CEOs of tertiary institutions, CEOs of corporate Māori, and CEOs of corporate charity. Now, it's invitation only, $10,000 a year membership fee. And guess who's a member? Doug Mackay, the CEO of Auckland Council. Now, I've made a huge fuss about that because I said, well, hang on a minute. When did ratepayers decide that we want our CEO as a member of this unelected, highly powerful private lobby group? And then I got an Official Information Act reply back from Auckland Council saying that, oh, no, he didn't pay the fee. He's an honorary member. And guess what? No elected member of Auckland Council ever endorsed or authorised Doug Mackay being a member of this unelected private lobby group. Well, on the 23rd of May this month, I will be attending a meeting of the Governing Board of Auckland Council, and my subject matter is exactly that point, because under the proposed plan for how Auckland Council is supposed to deal with this upcoming election, public servants are supposed to be apolitical. And what I want to know is how come the CEO of Auckland Council, Doug Mackay, is a member of the Committee for Auckland. That is highly, highly political. Because guess what, Linny? The big question is, how many contracts are going to member companies of the Committee for Auckland?
I would wager virtually all of them, if not obviously all of them.
Well, I've asked, and again, because we're not given that detail, we don't know. Now, how is that anything but a major conflict of interest to have the CEO of this public body, an unelected member of this invitation-only private lobby group? How is that okay? Well, guess what? The other thing I want to do about it, because I made a complaint, me and others made a complaint to the useless Office of the Auditor General about this conflict of interest, and the Office of the Auditor General, at least they're consistent in their uselessness, again, you know, did nothing, put it in writing that they weren't going to do anything. And so it is my intention, I spoke to a complaints officer from the Serious Fraud Office yesterday, and that is one of the things that I want, is that the Serious Fraud Office, which is the lead agency in New Zealand fighting corruption, to take this matter up. Because, here's another fact that a lot of people don't know, that there are 7 council-controlled, or should I say corporate-controlled organisations. The Committee for Auckland in each of the CCOs has at least 2 people who are members of the Committee for Auckland on these CCO bodies. Now, they're either there as the chair of the board of directors, a director, or as a CEO of those CCOs. So what you've got is this enormously powerful, great big octopus, which has got its tentacles directly extending into the public body, which was the Auckland Council and the CCOs. Now, how dodgy is that?
Now, I wonder what the Auditor General's real post and what his job description is. Is it, well, hold on, is the Auditor General's job to make sure that complaints are generally inaudible?
Well, basically, well, the person who is the Auditor General is actually a female, Lynn Provo. But I have to say, over the years, Vinny, I have taken complaints to the Office of the Auditor General maybe now 8 or 9 times, and serious matters. And every time, they have done nothing. In my considered opinion, they are spectacularly useless. And I say that in a caring way. But honestly...
Useless to you and anybody else who wants the country to not be fracked up by corporate scumbags. Therefore, it occurs to me that they might be actively working for these fracks.
Well, are they a public watchdog or are they a corporate lapdog? My experience, and I'm giving a considered opinion here, is that they are corporate lapdogs. Let me give you that one of the best examples is the rort of Metro Water charitable payments. Okay, I made a complaint as a spokesperson for the Water Pressure Group back in 2004 to the Office of the Auditor General, saying that Metro Water has been used as a giant cash cow, that payments for water and wastewater services were being increased, and then the money was being given to the council in the form of charitable payments to be used for other things. And the Office of the Auditor General okayed and whitewashed that. 3 years later, after a petition signed by 40 Water Pressure Group members helped to get a select committee of inquiry, the local government and environment select committee ruled the Metro Water charitable payments was unacceptable, and we got it stopped. And over 10 years, Auckland City Council had wanted to garner $320 million in the form of charitable payments from Metro Water and the Water Pressure Group. We got that stopped. Beat that.
Yeah. Well, you know, Penny, I was talking to a mate of mine the other day about how much respect I've got for certain women who are activists and things like that. And, of course, your name came up because you're so tenacious and, basically, you scare the heck out of me. So imagine how frightening you are to these big, disgusting, grovelling, cigar-smoking, 75-year-old Scotch whiskey-guzzling scum. We'll be right back after the break. The VinnieEastonShow.com with Penny Bright. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Penny Bright, soon to be the Lord Mayor of Auckland, hopefully, otherwise to be referred to as Her Worship. So Her Worship is not the one. She's Her Worship, you know, with the battle guns and things of that nature.
Oh, okay, Vinnie, thanks for that. Well, in terms of policies, well, following on from issues I campaigned over 3 years ago, campaigning for open, transparent and democratically accountable Auckland Council, number one, open the books. Open the books so we know exactly where the money's going. The second point is, if there's no cost-benefit analysis that proves that contracting out is more cost-effective for citizens and ratepayers, cut out the contractors, cut out the consultants, and bring those services back directly in-house. Number two is get rid of the CCOs, the council-controlled organisational model. I did a huge amount of research prior to the last mayoral campaign, and we found out there was never any cost-benefit analysis of this model. And I checked the Office of the Auditor General, never did one. The Department of Internal Affairs never did one. None of the 8 former councils ever did one, and neither did Treasury. So the concept that you are going to use this untried, untested model, put all your eggs in this council-controlled organisational model basket, when it has not been proven to serve the interests of the public majority, I mean, that is just totally fiscally irresponsible. Anyway, we know that they're a crock. And the fact of the matter is that, that Vinny, that private business people, when they come from the private or the corporate sector, what the hell do they know about the public service or being public servants? They haven't got a clue. They may be used to the Companies Act, the law of contracts, but the private sector, they're all about making money for shareholders. Well, guess what? When you come into a public sector office, such as local government, excuse me, it's a completely different world, or it should be. And what I am arguing, and I've taken this directly to, for example, the CEO Review Committee, because Doug McKay is not reapplying for his job in December this year. They're going to get someone else. And so I said, hang on a minute.
Well, hold on. Let me guess. He's going to get some massive job as a consultant somewhere.
I couldn't possibly comment on that. I don't know. But the fact is that when you get people from the private sector, they're not fit for duty. You know, like, what do they know about the Local Government Act, the Local Government Rating Act, the Human Rights Act, the Bill of Rights Act?
Penny, is there
they know nothing.
Is there an induction ceremony of some description? You know, allegedly Parliament's has induction ceremonies for its MPs, so they tell you about what you can and can't do and the new rules and things of that nature. Do they tell that to people at the council when they get inducted?
I think there's some very brief, something happens, but it's very brief. But the point is, if you've got people who've had decades of experience in the private sector, does a leopard change its spots? And the fact of the matter, I mean, look at John Key. I mean, the fact, he's come from being foreign exchange dealer, where you may do deals over the phone or over dinner, but that is no way to run a country. And that's what I keep saying about the importance of the Public Records Act, full and accurate written records. Because how many times do we see that there's been these really important meetings concerning affairs of state? There's no written records and nobody can remember the conversations. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me, and it's not following the law and the statutory duties that are imposed by the Public Records Act 2005. Please, people, New Zealanders, Google Public Records Act, read it for yourself.
They're not following their own laws.
They are not following their own laws. In fact, and just on a slightly different matter, the whole the sale of state-owned assets, just so people know, the ball has not been dropped over the Mighty River Power share launch. What has happened is formal complaints have been made to the Financial Markets Authority, the FMA, and also to the New Zealand Stock Exchange, because that those responsible for setting the final price for Mighty River Power shares were John Key, Prime Minister, Bill English, Tony Ryle and Stephen Joyce. Now, hang on a minute. The people that were responsible for setting the final price were four ministers at the highest levels, absolutely hell-bent in selling off, partially privatising that asset, come what may. Well, guess what? Under the Security Markets Act 1988, if you are an information insider, which those four ministers were, because they wouldn't tell us how they were going to arrive at this good price. They had information not available to the market, made them information insiders. As an information insider, you are prohibited by law, and it's actually a criminal offence to encourage trading. Well, you look at the press releases that were made by John Key, Bill English, Stephen Joyce and Tony Weil in trying to encourage the dumb and mad investors to please, you know, buy shares. They most definitely, in my opinion, were involved in criminal market manipulation, and complaints have been made to the Finance Markets Authority on that basis, and it's being looked into. And same with the New Zealand Stock Exchange. Regarding disclosure, all those huge full-page ads, who's ever seen a campaign like it, encouraging New Zealanders to share in something we already owned. And it was, the ads did not change, although we were told that the Labor Party, Green Party, New Zealand Power proposal was like North Korea, it's economic sabotage, it's this big, scary, hairy monster, and that that's, you know, the sky's going to fall in, but look on those four-page ads. How were inexperienced mum and dad investors to be made aware of the increased risk? And that's what the New Zealand Stock Exchange is looking into. So it's like, you know, that graphic of the frog. The stork's got the frog's head in its mouth, and the hands of the frog around the necks of the stork. That's the situation we're in. It's like some of us have been totally focused on trying to stop the sale, not just trying to oppose the sale, but stop it. And I want people to think of a pyramid. Whenever you're involved in any protest, think of a pyramid. Broaden the base and narrow the target. Why exactly are you marching down the street? What exactly do you want? Because often what I'm finding is a lot of protests, they're not clear, they're not focused, it's not sharp and pointed. What do we want? But with the Switch Off Mercury Energy Group that I've been involved in, we've been absolutely focused from day one to try and stop the sale of Mighty River Power, because Tony Weil said, 17th of June last year, let me make it quite clear, the government will not sell unless we can get a good price. Well, they didn't get a good price. They, you know, they sold it $2.50 a share. So who are they working for, Vinny? Taxpayers or investors? Because guess what? The majority of taxpayers are not investors. They've hardly got enough money to pay their stinking power bill, let alone got a spare couple of thousand dollars to invest in something they already own.
It's complete and utter madness. Unless you're a ruthless psychopath who loves stealing stuff off people.
Yeah, something to that effect, Vinny, but that's the secret. Like I said, and same with this mayoral campaign, it's not left versus right. And, I mean, I've had people say, oh, why are you standing against John Minto? It's like, well, hang on a minute. Number one, I had my hand up and I said that I was going to stand again sometime before John got Mana to endorse him. And neither John nor Mana ever approached me about this, which is, you know, that's okay. But the fact of the matter is, I think it's a good idea that John's standing, because he's going to be able to help outline Mana policies, which a number of which I agree with. And so in terms of using the electoral process to make a fuss about the issues, there's other people that I'd like to see stand in order to give these issues a huge airing, because I know last 3 years ago it helped, in my view. A lot of people got it about how the super city was not a good thing, but, oh, we don't want John Banks in, and we'd really like to vote for you, Penny, but we're going to vote for Liam Brown because we don't want John Banks. Okay.
Yeah. So I want to vote for the person who's exactly like John Banks, because I really, really don't like John Banks.
Interesting, isn't it? But, yeah.
Okay, whoa. This is my point. The public is frickin' retarded, Penny. They're frickin' retarded. They have no idea what the heck is going on. Most of them. Yeah, even the ones that have an inkling, even the ones that even freaking go out and bother to vote. How many people voted in the last Auckland mayoral election? There's 1.4 million people. How many votes got counted? Like 200,000 plus, something like that.
In terms of the percentage, I should know this off my top of my head, but I can't remember. But I mean, local government voting is, you know, is quite low, maybe 50% or something like that. But you see that the thing is. The thing is, Vinny, that, as I say, is an opportunity to explain the issues. I mean, for $200 to register as a candidate, you get 150 words that goes into a little booklet that goes into every house in the Auckland region from Papakura to Rodney. Now, in terms of cost effectiveness, beat that. Because you can advertise your website, you can make your points really clearly, and at least it helps to alert people. Because like I say, if there's one thing that I'm going to achieve on this campaign, is that people are going to have heard of the Committee for Auckland. Because there's no mainstream media has ever done a story on the Committee for Auckland. It's like this is a herd of mammoth elephants in the room. A herd of mammoth elephants, Vinny, the Committee for Auckland. And who's ever read about them in the local paper?
How much members of the Committee of Auckland used to work for TV3 and TVNZ, I wonder?
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of interconnections there, but you know how I really like making banners. Well, that's going to be one banner that I'm going to make, and I'm going to have pictures of the faces of Committee for Auckland members and show how they are currently interwoven into the Auckland Council and Auckland CCO structure. I'm going to name them and I'm going to shame them. And it's going to be there for the world to see.
Well, they are the tentacles that are squeezing the life out of the city. Now,
exactly right.
Agenda 21 occurs to me now. They're trying to... This is the other thing. Urbanisation, increased urbanisation, building up rather than building out. You know, when I was a kid, I thought that was a good idea. But now I know that there's an agenda behind it so that people really... they won't really have any freedoms left or anything.
Well, it's really interesting, Vinny, because you know me, I do my homework. And this concept that the mantra that we're getting is this million people coming to Auckland over the next 30 years. And it's like, well, hang on, back up the bus. Where's the evidence to support this million-person mantra? So I've done Official Information Act request to Nick Smith, the Minister of Housing. I've just today got a reply back because some of the questions were flicked off to the Minister for Statistics, Maurice Williamson, because I totally take the point of my very good friend Sue Henry, who's been a state housing advocate and a very effective one for about the last 30 years. And this is the issue. Why does all the growth have to come to Auckland in the first place? Why isn't there a national growth strategy? Who is benefiting from all this Auckland growth apart from property developers, speculators, and overseas investors? And at the moment, the Auckland region is going through this draft unitary plan, otherwise known as the Daft Lunatic Plan. And people have till the end of this month, May, to put in submissions to help stop this potential intensification and slumification of Auckland. Why does Auckland have to go up? Why does Auckland have to go out? Aren't there places in New Zealand where people could be encouraged to settle south of the Bombay Hills? How come in Dunedin there's such a strong Scottish influence? Because guess what? Immigrants from Scotland were encouraged to go and settle in Dunedin. And what was wrong with that?
It's just as cold as Scotland. That's what's wrong with it.
Be that as it may, well, just dress warmly. But anyway, the point is that, and I mean, I've stood on my hind legs and I've challenged this issue of why does all the growth have to come to Auckland when you bring that up? Because that's the whole underpinning thing. You know, if it wasn't all coming to Auckland, you wouldn't need all this pack and stack them, you know, these proposals. But the other thing is what you've got to look for in this corrupt corporate super city are links between the New Zealand Property Council and the Committee for Auckland and the Auckland Council Property Limited CCO. You know, we'll be...
I don't know about you, Penny. I don't know about you. But what I think is going to happen here, and this is in the Agenda 21 document, is that they're going to basically shove everybody into massive megacities and pack them and stack them things, connect the several megacities with mega highways, and they're going to close off the off-ramps and on-ramps to all the rural areas and let it all go back to nature. So all the farmers and everybody who's doing any kind of production or living off the land or anybody who's actually got any freedom left or anything will be stuck in a city under surveillance 24/7 in a pack 'em and stack 'em frickin' slave block next to the train tracks with no ability to get a personal vehicle conveyance.
Well, that's on that cheery note. it's just helping to alert people to what is happening and what is behind these agendas. Because that Agenda 21, I did done a bit of SWOT on that, and the role of corporations was specifically excluded from Agenda 21 in terms of their framework. Well, how bollocks is that?
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. The final segment coming up with Penny Bright. Waterpressure.wordpress.com is her website. TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com is mine. Back in a minute.
Uh-oh. Speed Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment here. Just before we go back to Penny, I just wanted to let people know that the show is entirely pretty much listener supported. So your donations and subscriptions are literally the only thing that keeps me on air. Okay? Every single person that we have on this show talks, well, most of them anyway, talk about really important stuff that can actually benefit whatever country you're in. You know, if you really have a look at the nitty-gritty details and things like that, you'll see the same crap going on here in New Zealand. There's the same crap going on everywhere in New Zealand. And there is only one news service in this country who covers all the eclectic spectra of issues. And that's me. Nobody else, just me. In terms of radio and video, nobody else is doing it. People are writing articles, and we have Uncensored magazine here from Jonathan Eisen, and, of course, the other magazine that they do, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. But other than that, the alternative media in New Zealand is very, very much on the underside, and there is not a whole lot of choice. Now, I do make sure that when I do find other people in New Zealand who are doing radio or YouTube videos or something of that nature, I make sure to bring them on the show so that they can have a little bit more coverage and perhaps grow their own little operation so it's not just me anymore. I've invited activists and things into my house and taught them and showed them how to use my camera equipment, let them borrow it when they go off to protest, and then showed them how to edit it and then upload it for them and things like that. So if you want to be an activist, I can assure you that the best way to do it effectively is to make your own media out of it if you have the time. Most of them don't have the time. That's why I take the responsibility to do it for them, because they're so much more busy making things happen, looking through legislation, writing letters of submission, going to public meetings, going to protests, going to council scumbaggery association confabs, you know. They do all the important work. I'm just your friendly neighborhood douchebag reporter. So please support me by giving a donation or a subscription of a couple of dollars a month, just a couple of dollars a month. We'll give you some commercial-free archives that saves you about 30 minutes of listening per day. That's like 10 hours a month that you can save yourself, and that's only if you're listening to the shows once. Nice and quick. Nice and simple, nice and easy. And if you want those ad-free archives for free anyway, just ask me and I'll send you the link. It's not that complicated. Now, at the moment, I'm at a loss because I have my Bluetooth wireless microphones finally died. I use my equipment so much, and stuff is not built to last these days, that after hundreds and hundreds of videos that I've made, recorded the sound with those Bluetooth wireless microphones, they are no longer working. Okay, and it costs about 450 New Zealand dollars to replace them at the Sony store. Okay, and I was like, oh my God, let's get one real quickly. And guess what? They're out of them for the next 5 weeks. So I've had to turn to eBay, and eBay's got one for about 250 delivered. If somebody's capable of sending me $250 so I can get my microphones replaced, because we tried to do it with a regular microphone when I had somebody over here the other day, and it was remarkably difficult. It is so much easier to just clip on and then it's done. So please, if somebody can help me to do that so I can help all the activists and stuff, as I do, and have proven that I've been doing for years and years, when nobody else in this country has even made even one iota of effort to do what I've been doing, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, make a donation, subscribe. I will be worth it. Back to Penny.
First of all, Vinny, I'd just like to give you the big thumbs up. I have worked with you for some years, and you have been there at critical times. And, I really encourage people, if you know, even if it's $5 a week or something, just to subscribe. If I was on the bones of my bum, I'd do a bit more of that myself. But, Vinny does deserve supporting, okay? Anyway, but before I get on to this action plan against white-collar crime, corruption and corporate welfare, just a very quick update on the campaign against John Banks. Now, who would ever have expected John Banks, the Minister for Small Business and Regulatory Reform, the Associate Minister of Education and Commerce, to be up in the dock as the defendant, John Banks. Who would have believed that? The secret is, Vinny, never, ever drop the ball. And full credit to Private Prosecutor Graham McCready for his work as a private prosecutor in getting this matter before the court. It's been a long time coming.
That reminds me, Penny, do you know how to contact him? Because I would love his phone number to be able to interview him, because nothing fills my heart with joy more than the thought of Banksy going to frickin' jail.
Well, the fact of the matter is, a lot of people don't know this either, is that under the Electoral Act, the section that deals with vacancies, if an MP is convicted of an offence that carries 2 years jail or more, if they're convicted, even if it was fined a dollar, John Banks is gone, Berger. It's not, oh, I choose to resign. Sorry, you are out of there. And that's a really big deal. Even if the matter's appealed, he's still out of there. So if people want to know more about the campaign against John Banks, look at dodgyjohnhasgone.com. It's got some of Graham McCready's court documents in there. There's the very significant decision of Judge Mill from the Wellington District Court. You'll find it fascinating reading, and that's the website that gives you what's happening with the John Banks case. He's next due in court on the 30th of May. All right, so we'll be there with bells on. Anyway, that's John Banks. Okay, just going through, how long we got, Vinny?
4 minutes, Penny.
4 months, okay. Just racing through here. The action plan to prevent corruption, white-collar crime and corporate welfare in New Zealand. Get our anti-corruption domestic legislative framework in place so New Zealand can ratify the UN Convention Against Corruption. Set up a New Zealand independent anti-corruption body tasked with educating the public and preventing corruption. Change New Zealand laws to ensure genuine transparency in the funding of candidates for elected public office and political parties at central and local government level. And with all the Banks fuss, we are getting law changes at local government level. Legislate for an enforceable code of conduct for New Zealand members of parliament who make the rules for everyone else. Make it an offence under the Local Government Act for New Zealand government elected representatives to breach their code of conduct. Make it a lawful requirement for a publicly available register of interest for New Zealand local government elected representatives. Make it a lawful requirement for a publicly available register of interest for New Zealand central government staff responsible for property and procurement, including the Ministry of Health, in order to help prevent conflicts of interest. Same thing, a publicly available register of interest for New Zealand local government staff, directors and staff employed by council-controlled organisations responsible for property and procurement. Make it a lawful requirement for details of contracts issued, including the name of the contractor, scope, term and value of the contract, to be published in New Zealand Central Government Public Sector and Local Government Council and CCO annual reports so they are available for public scrutiny. Open the books. Make it a lawful requirement that a cost-benefit analysis of New Zealand central government and local government public finances be undertaken to prove that private procurement of public services previously provided in-house is cost-effective for the public majority. If not, then return public service provision to staff directly employed in-house and cut out these private contractors who are effectively dependent on corporate welfare. Legislate for a legally enforceable code of conduct for members of the New Zealand judiciary to ensure they are not above the law. Ensure that all New Zealand court proceedings are recorded and audio records made available to parties who request them. Make it a lawful requirement for a publicly available New Zealand judicial register of interest to help prevent conflicts of interest. Make it a lawful requirement for a publicly available New Zealand register of lobbyists and code of conduct for lobbyists at central government ministerial level. Make it a lawful requirement at New Zealand central and local government level for a post-separation employment quarantine period from the time officials leave the public service to take up a similar role in the private sector help stop the revolving door. Make it a lawful requirement that is only a binding vote of the public majority that can determine whether public assets held at New Zealand's central or local government level are sold or leased via public-private partnerships, PPPs. Make it unlawful for politicians to knowingly misrepresent their policies prior to election at central or local government level. Make laws to protect individuals, NGOs and community-based organisations who are whistleblowing against conflicts of interest and corrupt practices at central and local government level and within the judiciary. Last but not least, legislate to help stop state capture, a form of grand corruption arguably endemic in New Zealand, where vested interests get their way at the policy level before the legislation is passed, which serves their interests. And if anyone wants to contact me to help with the campaign in any way, my email is waterpressure, one word, waterpressure@gmail.com. We need to get this message out. If you want to help, and remember, activists get things done, send us an email.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Waterpressure.wordpress is the website, wordpress.com, sorry, and as well as dodgyjohnhasgone, is that .org.nz, Penny?
.com
as well.
Dodgyjohnhasgone.com, it's got a ring to it, Vinny.
It does have a ring to it, just like the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Exactly right, and if you want to giggle, look at, give a girl a banner, we'll have a laugh, there's some graphics there you'll love.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to today's show. We very much appreciate it. And, of course, desperately need those donations and subscriptions to keep coming in so I can keep up this little operation, exposing scumbaggery and giving the activists who actually get the job done the coverage that they deserve. Not because I have to, but because nobody else is doing it. It's not a choice. It's a lack of options. We'll see you again sometime.